but I can't help it. Yeah, it's a long trip, but once we get there, it will be easy. There are so many different things we could take photos of, I argue, mentally crossing my fingers. Fair enough, Azelle-like gazelle. Put us down for the zoo theme. He takes my pen and grabs my notebook. He waves it in the air. I reach to snatch it back from him, but it's too late. His eyes grow large as he stares at the page the notebook has fallen open to. Whoa! I reach for my notebook and glance down at the page. I take a shallow breath of relief. It's not as bad as it could have been. It's only a stick figure with a noose around its neck. I think I drew it a couple of weeks ago in class when Mr. Scott was rambling on and on about angles and velocity, and I couldn't stop wondering about the destruction of energy. What's the deal with that hangman thing? I drew it when I was bored in class. Don't you get bored? Mr. Scott never stops talking about angles. My heart is racing, but I do my best to make my voice sound normal. He frowns and scrunches all of his facial features together.
You sure I shouldn't be worried about you?
For playing hangman?
It doesn't look like any game of hangman I've ever played,
he says softly. I shrug again and force myself to smile. I guess I just play a weird version of it.
Okay.
He swallows, and I can see him fumbling over his words. I've made Tyler Bowen speechless. I guess I can scratch that off my bucket list. He returns my half-hearted attempt at a smile.
I once heard that fish are the best animals to look at if you're depressed or whatever.
He punches my shoulder lightly, like we're old friends.
And the zoo has a great aquarium.
I sneak a glance at the Brian Jackson banner. Words sit on the edge of my tongue, and I'm half tempted to tell Tyler the truth, that the drawing isn't a joke or a game. I wait for the feeling to pass, but it doesn't. I'm like a grenade made of ceramic, solid and dense and cold, but still fragile. I could burst at any moment. I don't want to burst in front of Tyler. In the steadiest voice I can manage, I say, "So when do you want to go to the zoo? We should probably go soon, get a jump start on this. I know you're going to think I'm a nerd, but I really want to do a good job."
"We could go on Saturday,"
he offers. "During the day?" I think I'm technically scheduled to work on Saturday, but I can probably trade shifts with someone. Or I could just skip. My job seems more pointless now than it ever has. He curls his lips up over his teeth, his blue eyes glossy with surprise.
"Why? Do you have big plans on Saturday night or something?"
"No," I say, bracing myself for his teasing jab. But it doesn't come.
"How about I pick you up around 10?
"Works for me." I don't have to tell him where I live. He's picked up my sister a few times. I bet she's going to have a heart attack when she sees Tyler Bowen in our driveway waiting for me. The thought almost makes me smile.
"What?"
he asks. "Nothing," I say, and fold my hands in front of me on the table. "I'm just excited to go to the zoo." Thursday, March 21st. 17 days left. Today is Mike's 10th birthday. We're all gathered in the back party room of Pirate Jack's Laserplex. Pirate Jack's Laserplex is exactly what it sounds like, a run-down pirate-themed laser tag facility. It's housed in a cement block building that has small, dusty windows and stained, tiled floors. Steve always has Thursdays off, and Mom used a vacation day.
Georgia and I came straight from school to help Mom decorate the room with black and red streamers, eye patches, and fake gold coins. If you close your eyes, cover your ears, and spin around a few times, you could almost believe you were on a pirate ship, not stranded in Langston, Kentucky. Almost. I'm currently seated in the back of the room at a table by myself, balancing Mike's present on my lap and holding a plastic cup of orange soda in my left hand, trying to pretend like I don't feel ridiculous wearing a paper pirate hat. Steve sits in the front with his buddies, downing cans of cheap beer and applauding every time Mike opens a basketball or a baseball glove. Georgia, Mom, and some of Mom's friends sit at the table next to Steve's, gossiping about the cheer squad and lamenting how Christine Beth Thomas beat Sandra DeWitt in last month's beauty pageant. Every once in a while, Mom glances back at me. Like I've said before, she, Georgia, and I all have the same eyes, but Mom has different eyelids. Hers are dusky and weathered-looking. They have a sadness to them. She catches me staring at her, and I look away. Mike's ripped through his stack of presents like a tornado. Guess it's my turn. I reach out and carefully place my soda on the table. A sliver of sugary orange syrup sloshes over the edge of the cup and dribbles down my hand. I wipe my hand on my shirt and grip Mike's present. It's light in my hands when I want it to feel heavy, significant. I walk toward him. Mike grabs the present from me. "Hey, Azel," he says, his gray-green eyes lighting up. Mike looks eerily similar to Steve, a miniature version. They both have wavy blonde hair, small and beady gray-green eyes, and sharp, pointed chins. "Hey, Mikey," I say. "Happy birthday." The rest of the room has gone silent, watching us. I wrapped my gift in E equals MC squared paper. He doesn't seem to notice. He tears the paper away fast, and as he stares down at my gift, his small eyes stretch as wide as baseballs. Mike squeals and waves the gift, a comic book, in the air. It's an edition of The Amazing Spider-Man, signed by Stan Lee. He clutches it to his chest and beams at me. "Spider-Man! This is awesome!" He stares at the cover and traces his finger over the signature like he's hypnotized by it. Then he carefully places the comic on the table next to him and stretches his arms out wide, pulling me into a tight hug. My mouth feels dry, and my stomach is heavy like a bowling ball. I weakly return his hug and run my fingers through his wavy hair. "You're welcome, buddy. I hope you enjoy reading it for years to come." He squints at me, like he knows there's something wrong with what I just said. The problem is that I can't say what it is that I really want to say. I should tell him that I spent 15 paychecks to buy him that comic book because I desperately want him to have something nice to remember me by, to think of me as kind, as cool, as caring, not as the psycho offspring of a murderer who offed herself when he was 10. I want to be more to him than that. I know that might never happen, but I have this daydream where, a couple of years from now, when I'm gone and Mike misses me, he reaches for the comic book, and as he reads it, he feels better. He feels safe. He knows he can beat his demons in exactly the way I couldn't. "Hey," I hear a gruff voice call out. I let my arms drop from Mike's waist and turn around. It's one of Steve's buddies. He has stringy brown hair that falls to his shoulders, and he's wearing a camouflage print trucker hat. Hey, he repeats. Those things are expensive.
He gestures toward the comic book with the beer that's in his right hand.
I hope you obtained it legally.
He grins, revealing his crooked yellow teeth. His stare lets me know exactly what he's thinking about. My father. No worries, I say. Obtained completely legally. I bought it with my own hard-earned cash. The man turns his head to glance at my mother.
So she takes after you, Melda?
My mom nods stiffly and walks to the front of the room. She places her hand on the small of Mike's back and turns to face me.
That was a very thoughtful present, Azel. Thank you.
I swallow down the anger I feel thrashing around in my gut. I love my little brother. Of course I got him a nice present. Why do you have to act so surprised, Mom? I squeeze my jaw shut, afraid of what might come out if I open it. Mike is the only one of them who has never acted like it was strange when I moved in. The first day I arrived at Steve's house, Mike was waiting for me on the front steps, his grin stretched so wide I thought his face might break. My heart swelled when I saw his gap-toothed smile, and remembering it now makes me ache. When I first moved in, I used to read to him before he went to sleep on nights when my mom worked late, and sometimes he would beg me to play with him in the backyard. We'd run around, kicking our mud-stained soccer ball back and forth. But recently, I don't have the energy for any of that. My mom shuffles past me so she can stand behind the small table with the birthday cake. Mike, come here, help me cut the cake. Mike looks at her and then back at me. He gives me another tight hug and then bounds over to my mom. He's all energy and smiles and love. Mikey has always been that way. My throat is dry as I walk back to my seat and watch my mom slice the chocolate cake. It has melted, droopy frosting. She encourages everyone to eat quickly since we are scheduled to play laser tag in 20 minutes. While devouring the cake, Mike's friends take turns examining his presents. When one of them grabs for the comic book, his fingers coated with chocolate icing, Mike moves it away from his reach. Don't get it dirty. He looks over at me, and my heart seizes, and I think that any second it might explode. Sometimes I wonder if my heart is like a black hole. It's so dense that there's no room for light. But that doesn't mean it can't still suck me in. I'm going to miss Mike the most. I'm going to miss him so much, I almost can't stand it. I stick my fork into my slice of cake and sigh. I stand up and head toward the door. Mom walks up behind me and places her hand on my shoulder. Where are you going? Her heavy eyelids sag over her eyes, like any second they're going to snap shut so she won't have to see me anymore. Just to the bathroom? Okay, be back soon. You won't want to miss laser tag. Her words are simple, benign. But I know what she really means is I'm not allowed to act like a mopey loser here. This is Mike's birthday party, and I need to pull it together. And the thing is, she's right. It wouldn't be fair for me to go into the bathroom and sulk for hours. I want to scream at her. She never bothers to ask what's wrong or what's going on with me. She doesn't want to know. Even though Mom never went through the Kentucky beauty pageant system, she's still learned how to put on a show. She's great at delivering a megawatt smile, even when I know she wants to cry. Or speaking in a calm, measured voice, even when I know she wants to scream. Sometimes I wish she would scream.
Her always acting like everything's okay only makes me feel even crazier than I already am. I wonder if her facade would finally crumble if I told her what I'm going to do. If she knew what Frozen Robot and I were planning. I shake that thought from my head. Telling her would do more harm than good. Nothing she has to say can save me. I need to remember that. I walk down the hallway, staring at the specks of dirt that are sprinkled all over the tiled floor. I push open the door and head outside. I close my eyes as the cold wind smacks against my face. I put my hands in the snow that hasn't completely melted. My fingertips freeze. 17 days left. Friday, March 22nd. 16 days left.
I can't believe you're ditching me tomorrow, Roman says.
He's sitting on the mattress, bouncing up and down. Despite his height, he can sometimes look like a little kid. I think his outfit is throwing me off, too. He's not in his standard hoodie and track pants. His mom must have made him put on the pressed dark slacks and a cream-colored button-up shirt for the occasion. He looks a bit uncomfortable in them, like he's playing dress-up. Ditching you? I pace around his room. It's simple. Kind of what I pictured, not that I spend a lot of time imagining Roman's room. With its beige walls, mandatory University of Kentucky Wildcats basketball team poster, and maroon trim, it could just as easily be any other high school boy's room. On his nightstand, I see a picture of a toothy little girl. Her mouth is wide open in a smile, and she's sticking her tongue out at whoever was taking the photograph. She has the same color hair as Roman, same deep-set hazel eyes. The girl must be Madison. Roman's mom is downstairs cooking dinner, her attempt at Turkish cuisine. Should be interesting. His dad's still at work, but supposedly is going to make it home in time for the big event. I'm kind of surprised Roman's mom is cool with us being in his bedroom alone. It seemed like she thought something was brewing between Roman and me, but maybe she's smarter than I give her credit for. Though she did tell him to leave the door open, so there's that. Hey, I spin around to face him. Why did you let your mom go through with this?
This?
I shrug. This fake dinner thing. Don't you feel kind of bad that she's slaving away down there? He stops bouncing on the mattress and looks down at the ground.
Sort of, I guess. But it has to happen.
I scrunch my face together in confusion.
I need her to really believe that we're getting close,
he explains slowly.
So she'll let me be alone with you on April 7th. It's not like she's going to let me wander off with a complete stranger on the first anniversary of Maddie's death. She's too smart for that.
So I'm a pawn in your game. I guess I'd already figured that out. That's why he needs a suicide partner, after all. And really, he's a pawn to me, too. A means to an end. Or, rather, the means to the end. I go back to snooping around Roman's room. He has a signed baseball that's been strategically placed inside a Cincinnati Reds cap.
My dad got that for me, he says. We went to a game when I was little.
I nod and keep fingering his things. I wonder if it bothers him, me searching for his secrets while he watches. I look over my shoulder at him, and he's flopped out on the bed, his chin tilted toward the ceiling. If he does mind, it doesn't show. Maybe that's a side effect of knowing you're about to die. None of your secrets matter anymore. After you're gone, they'll all be discovered anyway. Poured over by other people. I don't like the idea of other people poring over my secrets. I don't even know if I have any secrets, besides Frozen Robot, and the secret I'm keeping from him, what my dad did.
So you're going to the zoo tomorrow?
Yeah, I say, flipping through his copy of Journey to the Center of the Earth. It's almost cute that he seems to have a slight obsession with Jules Verne. I slide it back onto the shelf and pull out 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
I used to like those books when I was younger.
Uh-huh. I turn the page, staring at the black and white illustrations. It's a nice copy of the book, like the kind you pay extra for. A collector's edition, or something like that. A creepy-looking sea creature stares back at me with its grapefruit-sized eyes. I slam the book shut. When I do, loose pages flutter out of it. I grab for one of them. It's a pencil sketch of a small turtle. The picture is drawn so well, it looks three-dimensional. Even though it was sketched in charcoal pencil, you can still get a sense of the turtle's leathery neck and his smooth shell. But there's something different about it, too. It's almost like staring at a turtle through a blurry lens. There's a surrealist quality to the picture. The markings on the turtle's shell are overly emphasized, and his front paws are elongated and thinned. I flip through the other drawings. Most of them are the same turtle, but I find one that looks like a rendering of Madison. Her eyes are wide and expertly shaded, and the sketch has captured her toothy smile. But even though Madison is smiling, there's a sadness to the picture, like the artist knows her ultimate fate, even if she doesn't. I can't stop staring at the drawing. It's haunting. Frozen Robot jerks up and scoots to the foot of the bed.
Those are stupid. Don't look at them.
I thumb back to the first sketch of the turtle and take a step toward the glass aquarium that houses the famous Captain Nemo. Right now, the turtle is bobbing up and down in the shallow water, paddling with his leathery feet. These aren't stupid. They're actually really good. I compare the sketch with the real-life Captain Nemo. It's almost dead-on, minus the fantastical quality of the sketch. The turtle Roman drew seems sad, almost like he's in mourning. His beady eyes are dark, and his back feet look too heavy and swollen to be used for swimming. You drew these?
Yeah.
His voice is quiet, and I can hear him shifting on the bed, the mattress sighing beneath him.
Can you put them away? They're embarrassing.
Why are you embarrassed of them? I mean, you did make Captain Nemo seem a bit more emo than I think he is, but besides that, you nailed it. I hold the drawing up against the tank. It's really pretty incredible. Roman doesn't say anything, but I hear him let out a light sigh in protest. I turn to face him. He's pulled his knees to his chest and wrapped his arms around them. I didn't know you drew. I sketch sometimes, but I can only draw stick figures. I stare down at the drawing and run my fingers over the turtle's smooth-looking shell, almost expecting it to feel real. These are impressive.
Whatever. I'm not like an artist or anything.
He shrugs.
It's just something to do when I'm alone in here. Kills time.
I nod and tuck the papers back inside the flap of the collector's edition of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Roman's body visibly loosens once the drawings are put away. So, I'm guessing Captain Nemo was named after the Jules Verne character?
I told you before, I didn't name him.
Roman's voice is suddenly cold. I shake off his harshness. Maddie did?
Yeah.
I drop the topic and stare at the real live turtle some more. I don't know much about turtles, but this one looks exceptionally well cared for. He has a bowl of fresh fruit, red ping pong balls to play with, and a large, smooth slate rock to sunbathe on. I wonder how Roman can bear the thought of leaving Captain Nemo behind, and if he knows what will happen to the poor guy once Roman isn't around to take care of him. I bite my lip. I'm not brave enough to ask. Or maybe I don't want to know the answer.
So are you and that guy dating or something? The dude you're going to the zoo with?
Roman asks out of nowhere. I try not to laugh and decide to ignore his stupid question. Roman obviously isn't too concerned about Captain Nemo's fate. Or if he is, he's not letting himself think about it. I lean over so I can inspect his shelf of trophies. I read the inscriptions. Lots of standard Little League stuff. But there's a big silver plaque that stands out. Its inscription reads, Willis High School Varsity Basketball MVP. I pick it up to take a closer look at it. It's heavy in my hand.
So your friends were right. You were really good at basketball. Why were you so modest about it?
He shrugs.
Because.
Because why?
It's not like I used to be good. I am good. And it's weird to brag about things you're still good at.
But you don't play anymore?
Nope.
He flops back on the bed.
I don't do anything anymore.
Except hassle me about going to the zoo. It's not like you and I had plans, frozen robot.
Don't call me that.
Okay, okay. He tosses a pillow at me, and it hits me in the side of the face.
Hey!
I say, rubbing my right cheek as if the pillow actually had the power to leave a mark.
Sorry, I just wanted to get your attention because I had a thought.
And what's that? He slides off the bed and sits at the foot of it. He pats the ground beside him. I take a seat next to him. I guess he's tired of me snooping out his secrets. I lean my head back against the edge of the mattress.
I realized I'm going to die with you, and I don't even know your favorite color.
I clap my hand over my mouth and shake my head. Way to make everything weird again, frozen robot. As I think about his question, I move my hand from my mouth and pick at the carpet. It's cleaner than the carpet in my and George's room. There's no crushed potato chips or specks of lint hiding in the fibers.
What?
He says, my favorite color isn't going to tell you anything about me. He scoots closer to me so his shoulder rests against mine.
Fine. Then tell me something about you. I want to know something about you. It doesn't seem right that you're a complete stranger.
Complete stranger? You know things about me. Hell, your mom is cooking me dinner right now. He gives me a blank stare, so I add, Turkish food. She's cooking Turkish food for me, because I'm... He waves his hand in the air and cuts me off.
You know what I mean. Not this fake stuff.
His eyes widen, and he kind of looks like a puppy. A sad puppy.
I want to know something real. Something that not everyone in the world knows about you.
His puppy face deepens, his mouth sagging at the corners. I can't get to sleep when I have socks on, but my feet are always cold, so it's kind of a problem. I watch his face pull back up into a crooked smile. He stares at my gray Converse sneakers.
Maddie hated to wear socks.
Really?
Yeah. She always told me that wearing socks made it feel like her feet were suffocating.
Smart girl.
She was,
he says. And then he rests his head on my shoulder, and I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do. I think he's looking for comfort, but I don't have any to give. I awkwardly pin my hands at my sides and hum Mozart's Symphony No. 24. He doesn't seem to mind, though. He doesn't move away, and I can feel his shoulders rise and fall slowly with his breaths. Recently, I've become so much more aware of the things we do that keep us alive, our inhales, our exhales, our heartbeats. Can I ask you something, without you getting mad?
Anything,
he says. I know you blame yourself for Maddie's death, but do your parents? His whole body goes rigid, but he doesn't lift his head from my shoulder. If anything, he leans against me harder, like a slab of wood propped up against a wall.
They're in denial. But I still hear my mom cry every night. She tries to put on such a good face, but I know she's broken inside. And she's broken because of me. So, I guess they don't blame me, at least not actively, but only because I think they're terrified of losing me, too.
My heart constricts. I squeeze my eyes shut and try to forget what Roman just said, but images of his mom flash through my mind. I see her standing over his body, his clothes soaked with river water, his face blue and cold, his mouth open, his tongue swollen from lack of oxygen. Bile builds up in the back of my throat, and I slide away from him. His body jerks in response, and he sits up. He pulls his knees to his chest, his camping chair pose. People are funny. The longer you are around them, the more you start to realize that everyone makes the same motions over and over again. We all want to believe that every day is different, that every day we change, but really, it seems that certain things are coded into us from the very beginning. I'm not sure if Roman was always a half-moon smiler and a camp chair sitter. Maybe that happened after Maddie's death, but one thing is for sure. His body is always on alert, like he's walking high above the ground on a trapeze wire. I think his potential energy is guarding him against the pain of his world, saying, "Smile, it will be over soon," and "Wrap yourself up and you won't feel so much." Maybe even in death, his energy will live on and make those gestures. I wonder if those are the things his mom will remember about him, too, or if she'll picture him on the basketball court, dribbling. Or maybe she'll remember him sprawled out on the couch, sketching pictures, or with his nose in a Jules Verne novel. I wonder what my energy will do after I die. I wonder if our energy will really outlast us. He reaches out to touch my arm.
Azel?
Yeah?
You look like you drifted away.
Sorry.
Okay, well, I've been thinking.
He says. Yeah?
I want to go to the zoo with you. You should bring me when you go with that other guy.
Before I can respond, Roman's mom calls up to us. Guys, dinner is ready. Come on down. He stands up slowly and offers me his hand. I take it and he pulls me up. I know he's waiting for me to tell him about the zoo, but I pretend like it never happened. He mock bows, signaling for me to go down the steps before him. Roman's mom is waiting for us in the foyer. She grabs my face in her hands and pulls me close. I'm just so glad you were able to make it. I really hope you enjoy the food. I should probably tell her I'm not an expert on Turkish cuisine, that I know nothing about it, that she could have cooked me a cheeseburger and it would have passed as authentic. But I sort of like being the center of attention. I'm starting to understand why Georgia thrives on it so much. It's nice having people wait on your every move. I fold the feeling up and tuck it away. I'm glad I got to have it before April 7th. Azel, she says, pronouncing my name perfectly. Meet Mr. Franklin. Roman's dad is tall, like him, almost bald, with a long, narrow face. He sticks his hand out, and I shake it.
Nice to meet you,
he says, and I do my best to look friendly. Azel and Roman met at the old playground, she tells Mr. Franklin, clutching onto his arm. Mr. Franklin turns to face Roman.
You've been playing ball again?
There's a touch of surprise in his voice. My eyes dart from Mr. Franklin to Roman to Mrs. Franklin and back again. Mr. Franklin might be on to us.
I'm starving, I say, in hopes of avoiding any more questions about how Roman and I met.
Me too,
Mr. Franklin agrees.
Let's eat.
Once we're seated at the table, Roman's mom leads us in prayer. I don't close my eyes, but I notice that Roman does. The whole room smells like oregano and cumin, and my head fills with the image of my father's friend's wife who cooked dinner for us one night when they'd come to visit. She'd held my face in her hands, much like how Mrs. Franklin did a moment ago, and she'd whispered to me in Turkish. I didn't understand any of it, so I'd pretended she was saying, "Everything will be okay, Azel. It's all going to work out." I know now that she probably wasn't saying that. And even if she had been, she was wrong. Mrs. Franklin passes a warm casserole dish to me.
"This is kuzu güveç."
She looks at me as if to ask if her pronunciation was correct. I have no idea, so I weakly nod.
"It's sort of like a lamb stew."
The table is crowded with other dishes, stuffed grape leaves, lamb and chicken kebabs, a rice pilaf, and a yogurt sauce. There's also a small dish of jalapenos for Roman. It must have taken her hours and hours to prepare, and it all looks fantastic. But as I stick my fork into the lamb, ready to take a bite, I feel my appetite disappearing. I stare at Mrs. Franklin, her smiling, eager-to-please face, and know that Roman and I are about to break her heart. This whole dinner, her effort to connect with me, is more than my own mother has ever done. Mrs. Franklin keeps smiling at me, wanting to know my opinion on everything. Her eyes are bright, and I recognize the spark in them. Hope. She thinks Roman is getting better, that he's made a new friend, that he's showing interest in a girl. I slide my fork across my plate, pushing the lamb into the rice. I do my best to swallow my guilt.
"This is really good, sweetheart,"
Mr. Franklin says as he wipes his mouth with his napkin.
"I have to admit I was nervous at first."
He glances over at me.
"Not that I didn't think it would be good, but I've just never had food like this before."
I nod at him to let him know I'm not offended. I don't know enough about Turkish cuisine to have any vested stake in whether Mr. Franklin likes it or not. I wonder what it would be like to actually know something about the place my parents came from. Mrs. Franklin bobs her head up and down with excitement at Mr. Franklin's compliment.
"And you like it too, Azel?"
"It's delicious," I say, like I'm some kind of expert.
"Oh, good."
She squeezes her hands together and beams. I really don't want to break her heart. Saturday, March 23rd. 15 days left. Georgia and I are sitting at the kitchen table, and she's peering out the window. I think she's hoping to catch a glimpse of Tyler before we take off.
"Who's the cutie?"
She presses her face against the window pane. I take a sip of my black coffee. I keep trying to teach myself to like coffee, but no matter how hard I try, I can't get past the bitter taste.
"I thought you knew Tyler."
"Don't mess with me," she says. "That boy isn't Tyler. He's taller, and his hair is shorter."
I look out the window and see Mrs. Franklin's red Jeep pulling out of our driveway. The doorbell rings, and I get up to answer the door, but Georgia beats me to it. She flings it open, puts her hands on her hips, and in her sweetest voice says,
"Hello, nice to meet you."
Hi.
Roman says, as he walks into our house. I've never been embarrassed by anything at Steve's house, mostly because I spend all my time embarrassed about being me, but the second Roman enters, I start noticing everything that is wrong. Our carpet is stained,
and there's a pile of dirty dishes in the sink. It looks nothing like his immaculate, spotless house. I know I shouldn't care what he thinks. It's not as if he's going to decide that he doesn't want to jump off the cliff at Crestville Point with me because my house is a disaster zone. But I don't like the idea of him feeling sorry for me. I wish the black slug would go ahead and eat my self-consciousness along with my happiness. He sticks out his hand to greet Georgia like he's a statesman. Southern manners die hard, I guess.
I'm Roman,
he says.
I'm a friend of your sister's.
I'm surprised he was even able to deduce that Georgia was my sister, considering our lack of sibling resemblance. Half-sister, I blurt out before Georgia can say anything. A flicker of annoyance washes over Georgia's face, but she ignores me and turns her attention back to Roman. She steps closer to him and tugs on the back of her shiny ponytail.
So, how do you know Azel?
Roman looks down at the floor and shuffles his feet.
We met a few weeks ago at the basketball court out in Willis.
Georgia spins around to face me.
What were you doing in Willis?
Why do you care what I do? I motion for Roman to take a seat at the kitchen table. Can I get you anything to drink? As I watch his eyes scan the room, I want to put my hands over them and lead him out of our house before he can see anything else. My mom works, I say, trying to come up with any excuse for why the house is a mess.
Yeah, she works at Swift Mart, Georgia adds, skipping into the kitchen. 6 days a week, poor woman.
Poor woman. There are worse things in Mom's life than the fact that she works at Swift Mart. Try, her first husband is a convicted murderer, or her firstborn daughter is a depressed freak.
Don't you have somewhere to be?
Cheer practice or something? I ask, opening the refrigerator. Roman didn't answer if he wanted something to drink, but I'm going to give him orange juice anyway. I pour it and put the glass down in front of him.
Thanks,
he says absently. His mind is elsewhere. I notice that the glass is foggy with dust. Gross. Sometimes it takes watching someone else observe how you live to realize exactly how you live. Georgia takes a seat next to him.
I don't have cheer practice today. I was thinking I might tag along with you guys.
I try not to gape at her.
What?
But it's for a physics project. She turns to Roman. Are you working on the physics project? He gives me a slight smile before he says,
Nope, I just like the zoo. The sense of adventure, the animals.
She props her elbow up on the table and grins at me.
I like the zoo too, and I'm all about adventures.
The doorbell rings again, and I walk to the front hallway and open the door. Tyler Bowen is standing on the doorstep, his hands shoved in his pockets, wearing a white baseball cap that shades his blue eyes.
Hey, Azel.
Want to come in for a second? He shrugs.
Sure.
He follows me into the kitchen.
Tyler!
Georgia springs up from her seat. She darts over to him and gives him a hug. He returns her hug, squeezing and lifting her off the ground. She giggles, and Roman and I exchange a what-the-hell look.
What's up?
Tyler says. And I'm not sure if he's asking the entire group, but only Georgia answers.
I just asked if I could go to the zoo with you guys.
She gives Tyler a pleading look, like he can be the tiebreaker between my adamant no and Roman's indifference.
I didn't know you two hung out, Tyler says to Georgia in a completely serious voice.
Now I almost want to give Tyler a hug myself.
I think Georgia should come,
Roman volunteers. And now he's apparently switched his vote from indifferent to yes.
I'm Tyler, by the way,
Tyler says, sticking his hand out to greet Roman.
And you are? Roman.
He grips Tyler's hand, firm. Way to go, frozen robot.
I'm a friend of Azel's.
Tyler tries to hide his shock, but it's obvious to everyone what he's thinking. It's the same thing any of my classmates would think if they saw Roman and me out of context. A good-looking basketball player and the dark girl from school with the murderous father. I guess everyone sees us out of context, though. They met at a playground in Willis, Georgia interjects, beaming at Roman.
I see, Tyler says. Well, should we get going? Since the animals are sleepy later in the day, we need photographs of them moving, right?
Are you driving? Georgia asks.
Yeah, Tyler says, dangling his keys in the air. We can all fit in my car.
I call the front seat, Georgia says, jumping to her feet. I run upstairs to our bedroom and dig through my backpack to find the camera I borrowed from the school library. I find it and put it into a smaller purse I borrow from Georgia's closet. It's baby blue, shaped like a seashell, and made of fake leather. It's not something I would buy in a million years, but it fits the camera perfectly, and who cares about the stupid color? Fashion is the least of my concerns right now. I sit on the bedroom floor and take a couple of deep breaths, humming Mozart's Requiem, mentally preparing myself for what's about to happen. Just as I'm about to head back downstairs, I hear a shuffling behind me.
Today is going to be interesting, Roman says.
Way to follow me upstairs without an invitation, frozen robot. You're telling me. I don't get why you wanted to come in the first place, I say. He holds out his hand and helps pull me up from the floor.
Don't lie. You're now real glad I decided to come, or else you'd have to suffer through the Tyler Georgia show all by yourself.
You're the one who told her she could come, I mumble as we walk down the stairs.
It's better this way.
He opens the front door for me. I grab my jacket off the coat hook and pull the house keys out of the pocket and lock the door. I doubt it.
It is,
he says.
Trust me.
The air outside is crisp, and the sky is clear, and you can smell spring's moist, floral scent in the air. It's a perfect day for the zoo. As we walk toward the car, I look up at Roman. I don't know if it's trust I feel for him. I guess I have to trust that he's going to jump when I do. Not that it really matters, as long as I go. I know that's an awful thing to think, but that's one thing where the trolls on the internet are maybe right. It's a selfish act. It's all about you, which is what makes the suicide partner thing so weird. You only need your partner until you don't. Saturday, March 23rd. 15 days left. We arrive at the zoo after about 2 hours of driving. The drive wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. Everyone was pretty quiet. We spent most of the time listening to Georgia hum along with the radio. Occasionally, Tyler would ask her a question, and she'd answer him in her animated Georgia way. She interrogated Roman, and he handled it pretty well. She all but asked him if we were dating, and he managed to keep her guessing. Having met his mom, I'd bet he's had a lot of practice at answering rapid-fire questions. Tyler parks the car, and the four of us make our way to the entrance. We wait in line to buy tickets. There's an awkward moment when I can tell Tyler is considering buying George's ticket for her, but then he'd feel obligated to buy mine. And let's face it, Tyler Bowen doesn't want to waste his money on me. Roman shoulders past me and hands the woman working at the counter a wad of cash.
4 student tickets, please.
Roman, Georgia says in fake outrage, you don't have to do that.
Seriously, dude, Tyler says, I can pay for my own ticket. It's no problem. Don't worry about it.
Roman flashes me a smile.
The woman at the counter counts out his change and hands it back to him. I notice that her hands look much older than her face. I look down at my own and don't know if I feel happy or sad that I'll never see them wrinkled. Once we're inside the zoo, I whisper to Roman, "What was that?" He shrugs.
"You can't take your money with you."
Tyler raises his eyebrows when he sees me leaning into Roman's ear.
"I didn't know you were turning our science project into your personal date."
Georgia loops her arm through Tyler's.
"That's why I came along, Ty. Now you won't feel so left out."
He pets Georgia's arm as he turns his attention to me.
"The zoo was your idea, Azel. Where should we go?"
"Why don't we go to the nocturnal house? We can photograph the bats. They hang upside down. Potential energy."
"Right. Bats are like living hangmen," Tyler says, an edge to his voice.
Roman and Georgia give Tyler questioning looks, and I do my best to also act confused, which turns out to be pretty easy, since bats are nothing like living hangmen, but now doesn't seem like the appropriate time to push the subject with Tyler. "It's this way," I say, and dart ahead of the group. I basically have the Louisville Zoo memorized. When I was younger, Mom used to take me here on the weekends a lot. She thought it was good for me to have alone time with her. She gave up on that when I was about 8, since Georgia was getting older and Mike was a handful of a toddler. She'd never admit it, but she was busy building her new family and happy to leave me to my father. It took him finally snapping for her to really notice me again. And no one wants to be noticed because of something like that. It's like being an invasive species that no one pays any attention to until you've strangled and ruined all the beautiful native plants. The inside of the nocturnal house is how I remember it. It's dark and smells like rotting fruit and vegetables. I hear Georgia giggling behind me, which must mean the group managed to keep up with my quick pace. I rush past the cages of opossums and raccoons and find the vampire bats. When I reach the exhibit, I see the bats hanging from the ceiling, their black, leathery wings wrapped around their bodies. Roman comes up behind me and puts his hand on my shoulder. I jump.
"It's just me,"
he says. "I know. And that's exactly why I'm skittish." I pull the camera out of my purse.
"Thanks for asking if you could borrow my purse," Georgia says.
"You should really keep your voice down," I say. "You don't want to scare the animals." Georgia glares at me, and she curls her upper lip, her white teeth glinting in the dark room. "That's funny. You telling someone else not to be scary."
"Georgia,"
Tyler hisses at her.
"What?"
she says as she tosses her head back. Her barb lingers in the air like smoke from a bonfire. Roman says, shifting his weight from his right foot to his left.
"How about we just let Azel take the photo?"
"Fine," Georgia says. "Let's leave her to it. Want to go see the armadillos? They're so cute."
"Sure, whatever you want,"
Roman says, and they head down the hall. I turn the camera on and look through the viewfinder. I snap a few photos and then scroll through the images. "Here," I say, holding the camera out to Tyler. "I think this is a good one."
"Yeah, I think Mr. Scott will like it,"
Tyler answers. "Too bad I won't be around to see his reaction." I shove the camera back into my purse. "So should we go meet them by the armadillos?"
"She just wants to be your friend, you know,"
Tyler says. I close the purse with so much force that I almost break the zipper.
I don't think so."
"Yes, she does. That's why she came today."
"Right."
"It's pretty obvious."
I give him a blank stare, and he continues.
"She's always trying to get your attention, trying to make you laugh. She's not so bad, you know."
As we walk down the dark hallway in search of the armadillos, I consider what Tyler said about Georgia wanting to be my friend. I'm pretty sure it's complete bullshit. Georgia came to try to cozy up to Tyler. Dating Tyler Bowen would skyrocket her social standing. Freshman cheerleader dates junior basketball player. It's like an awful teen movie. I think you're wrong about the reason she came today, I say. It's not me. It's you. As we approach the armadillos, I see Roman and Georgia standing right next to each other, pressed up against the glass. They're peering at the animals and laughing like they're old friends.
I'm not so sure I'm the one she's interested in.
Tyler gives my shoulder a nudge. I roll my eyes at him. She can have Roman. I don't say, but good luck with that, because he'll be dead in a few weeks. Roman grins when he sees us.
Where to next?
The lions, I suggest. I think they feed them around noon. If we hurry, I can get a shot of them eating. I'm really thirsty, Georgia says. She turns to Roman. Want to go with me to get a lemonade? Roman looks at me and I shrug. You can meet us by the lions. I'm actually thirsty, Tyler says.
I'll go with you.
Georgia slightly frowns. Oh, okay.
Then I'll go with Azelle,
says Roman, and he walks over to stand beside me.
We'll catch up with you guys soon.
Once Georgia and Tyler are gone, I say, Aw, you missed your chance to make out with Georgia by the concession stand.
I thought you promised you were going to stop making stupid jokes.
I give him my you-caught-me face. We leave the nocturnal house and head toward the lions. When we get outside, I notice that the sky has darkened and the sun is hiding behind some scary-looking rain clouds. I tuck my hands into the pockets of my jacket and run my fingers over the fleece lining. That wasn't a joke. I'm pretty sure she wants to eat your face.
The two of you are nothing alike. What's up with that?
I stare straight ahead, not making eye contact with him. We don't have the same dad.
Yeah, you said she was your half-sister, but still, she's like a lion, and you're like an armadillo.
An armadillo? He touches my shoulder.
You know what I'm trying to say.
My dad. I give him a hard look, hoping he'll drop the subject. I don't expect you to understand, but he makes all the difference. We reach the lions. Only three of them are visible, and it doesn't look like they're eating. Damn, we must have missed feeding time. The male lion is lounging on a large rock, and the two females are huddled together in the opposite corner of the fenced enclosure. The male lion opens his mouth to yawn, and a little kid near us jumps up and down with excitement. Another kid, who's apparently not as brave, tucks himself into his mom. I reach for my camera and wish I'd had it out in time to capture the moment.
Where's your dad now?
Roman asks. The answer to Roman's question is state prison. As far as I know, my dad's locked up in some podunk town miles and miles away from me. Away. Gone. I say, and snap a few photos of the lions. Maybe one of them will be usable. Just drop it, okay? Roman reaches his hand out and presses it against the back of my wrist.
I don't understand how someone who's not in your life anymore can make all the difference.
I walk away from his touch, away from the lion enclosure, and take a seat on a bench. Roman follows me.
Look, I'm sorry. I'll let it go.
I drop my elbows to my knees and hunch over. I know it's hard to understand, but it's true. My dad... I take a breath. My dad ruined my whole life.
I don't tell Roman that my dad not only ruined my life because of what he did, but also because he made me scared of what I am, what I'm made of. As I think about this, something inside me shifts. I don't know if it's the black